Okay. So it's hard to match the excitement surrounding Yetzias Mitzrayim. We read the beginning of B'Shalach and the words are very triumphant, but before you even read B'Shalach, think about the way David HaMelech describes Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf. B'tzeis Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, B'eis Yaakov mi Emloeis, Ha'isa Yehuda l'kodesho Yisrael ha'yamra. I mean, these are incredibly poetic words, incredibly triumphant words. And B'Shalach follows that same style. Vahi B'Shalach paro sa'am, V'yase v'lokim sa'am, V'yisu misukos v'yachanu b'itam, V'ashem holech lifnehem yomam, V'amud anan l'anchosam haderech. Can you guys see the screen? Alicia, you can see the screen? Yeah. Lo yamish amud hanan, v'nei se yatsu b'yad ramah. And then right in the middle, there's a pasuk that's chronologically and stylistically disjointed. Stylistically disjointed, it just highlighted for you because it talks about a totally different topic. And it describes it in very, very humdrum and prosaic fashion. Moshe holds the Atzmos Yosef because of the Shvuah. What does this have to do with the Yetzias Mitzrayim? And it's only the style is much more mundane, not as triumphant, exciting, and epic style. But not just that, what's even more pressing and what makes the question even more compelling is all this happened in Parshas Bo. In Parshas B'Shalach, we are already in the desert. They're already in the desert deciding which route to take. Moshe presumably takes the bones of Yosef in Mitzrayim and Medrash fills in the blanks. He hauls them up from the Nile River. So this pasuk literally is inserted. It's a Bo pasuk inserted into B'Shalach. And the style doesn't really jive, doesn't really make sense. Why is this pasuk being inserted? And the answer to that question is because it really highlights the heroism of Moshe, because how is the heroism on two fronts? Number one, because Moshe was very busy that day. And he could have very easily have delegated the porting of the Atzmos Yosef to someone else. He has to deal with Mitzrayim and Paro. Let me just shut my phone off because I'm getting a lot of WhatsApp. I don't want to constantly be disturbed. He has to deal with Mitzrayim and Paro. He has to deal with all the livestock and the folk and the food and the fear and the panic. So you could very much imagine Moshe Rabbeinu asking someone, you know what, I'm a little busy today. Can I ask you to take care of Atzmos Yosef? And the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu personally attends to Atzmos Yosef and personally carries Atzmos Yosef of someone he never met. It's not like it's his grandfather, never knew him, not even a shevet. This is Yosef. Moshe's a Levi, different mother. But Moshe feels both on a personal level indebted to Yosef. And second of all, he has a sense of history. He feels on the one hand that Yosef's vulnerable and wants to try to help out. Obviously, someone who's already buried can't control their own fate. But also because of the promise of Pakod Yifkod Elokim Mischem Mizeh. And he doesn't just take it sheepishly or begrudgingly. You know what, I'll just take the Atzmos Yosef. He really internalizes it, becomes just as important as these exciting, bombastic public events of Yetzias Mitzrayim and standing down to Paro performing miracles. The fascinating Gemara Nazir Daf Mem Hei, the Gemara wants to know, can a Tamei Meis, someone who's Tamei, Mitzaras leave all the machanos? What about a Tamei Meis? Must he leave all the machanos? So the Gemara says, no, a Tamei Meis can actually walk into Machane Levia. He can't walk into Machane Shechina. He's expelled from Machane Shechina, but he can walk into Machane Levia. Essentially, a Tamei Meis can remain in Yerushalayim because Yerushalayim has the status of Machane Levi. How do we know? Well, the Gemara says it's pretty easy because Moshe was a Tamei Meis the entire time he was in the Midbar, aside from the time he had to walk into the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because Moshe carried the bones of Yosef with him. And by carrying the bones of Yosef, you become a Tamei Meis. So on a day-to-day basis, if you interviewed Moshe, it turns out he was a Tamei Meis, and yet he lived in Machane Levia. That's where he resided. So Gemara says in Nazir, V'lo Tamei Meis Bilvad, Alafila Meis Atzmo, not just a Tamei Meis, but even the dead body can be in Machane Levia. Shenemar, V'yikach Moshe Asatzmos Yosef Imo, my Imo? Imo b'mechitzasa. Now that's a halacha the Gemara derives in Nazir, but it's really a modality also. for Moshe, these bones were not just something he was forced to take and wanted to keep a distance from. It was part of his life. It was part of his identity. It was part of his experience. He was committed to it. He bought in. He was invested. He deeply aligned and identified with this journey of Yosef's bones to Eretz Yisrael. Again, both on humanitarian reasons, because Yosef was vulnerable and needed help. The great mighty Yosef of Sefer Bereishis had to beg his brothers in the end to please, please take his body out of Mitzrayim. And also historically. It's a beautiful medrash that contrasts the grand burial process, the grand burial procession of Yaakov in Parshas Vayechi. We read about everyone that escorted Yaakov and all the people in Eretz Canaan took notice. It was a real pageantry and with Yosef. So we think Yosef's burial process is very private. Who attends Yosef's burial? Very sad to see some of the COVID-19 funerals of great people that are very sparsely attended. You think to yourself, how many thousands of people may have come? Moshe Mushkovitz, who died on Sunday, or Shabbos, Levaya was Sunday, sparsely attended. He would have had tens of thousands of people. The entire Gush would have come. Everyone who lives in the Gush owes something to Moshe Mushkovitz. He was the person that founded the Gush, founded Efrat. It's hard to see these really small Levayas. But yet the matter says, you may be mistaken if you're just looking at it from a naked eye. V'lo od, source de Megimel, Shem Yaakov alu avdei paro, Mizikne beso v'im Yosef. Okay, Yaakov's funeral procession had a couple dignitaries and noblemen from Paro's court. But Yosef, you know who escorted Yosef to his burial? Aaron, Shechina, Kohanim, Levim, Kol Yisrael, Shiva Anani HaKavod, V'lo od, Shem Halech Aaron, Shel Yosef, Emoron Chayo Lamim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was escorting. It's ridiculous. The Aaron, the Shechina, the Kohanim, Levim, Yisrael, and Shiva Anani HaKavod, they weren't escorting Yosef, they were escorting the Jewish people. Yosef was a tag-along. Yosef was a trampist. Yosef was a hitchhiker. Yosef was just along for the ride. The 40-year journey with all the pageantry and all the excitement was not a journey for Yosef. It was a journey for Am Yisrael. Yosef happened to be being logged. Moshe was carrying the bones. The answer is, there's one person for whom this entire 40-year journey was also about Yosef, and not just about Am Yisrael, for whom Yosef wasn't just a tag-along, who was able to see that this is just as valuable for Yosef as it is for Am Yisrael. This medrash is being delivered to us through the eyes of Moshe. Through the eyes of Moshe, he so deeply identified with this task and this honor to bury Yosef, that for him, everything was just as much about Yosef as it was about Am Yisrael. The Anani HaKavo, the Aaron, the Shechina, the Kohanim, Levim. If you interviewed Moshe, why are they there? They're there for Am Yisrael, and they're there for Yosef as well. This is a very heroic moment of Moshe, and it's a heroic moment of Moshe on two levels. First of all, as I keep telling you, you want something done, ask a busy person. It sounds counterintuitive. Person's busy. Oh my goodness, I don't have time. But it's just a different orientation in life. One orientation is people who perform tasks, get things done. Executionists in Hebrew, there's the word bitsuist. Bitsua means to execute. He's a bitsuist. He executes. Bitsuist. Don't think. They don't. One of the things they talked about Mushko and some of the Levayos, some of the Spadim was he had like a little pen and paper, a little pad of paper, he'd write things down, and he would just literally write a whole list of things to do that day, cross them off one by one as he got them done. One of the great, great enemies of productivity is procrastination. And you have to really learn that about yourself, because everyone falls into the trap of procrastination. Why do you procrastinate? What about it's things you dread, things you're afraid, things you think you'll fail at? Generally, you procrastinate because we can't face failure. And the irony is, the more we procrastinate, the more we increase our chances for failure, because generally, the more immediate and alacritous we are in performing our tasks, the more successful we are. The more we delay them, it's become more complicated, less successful, less immediate, less spirited. So always try to be that person in Mirtz Hashem one day when you're growing up, and that could happen immediately, that doesn't excuse themselves because I'm too busy for, but says, why can't I be involved in that as well? It was so easy for Moshe just to, look, I'm just really, really busy today of all days. It's Yom Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's not my birthday. It's the birth of an entire nation. I've got cows and donkeys and paros and slaves and people, and just, you know, take care of it for me. But Moshe says, I really want to be involved in this also. And there's a second related message. It's not just about being involved in as much as you can rather than opting out and acquitting yourself because you're very busy. Hi, Joe. It's also about not getting lost in the frenzy. It's one thing if Moshe would have said, look, I'm involved with Pyro, I'm involved with the donkeys, and all the people. I also want to be involved in talking to Hashem. I don't want to give that up because it's also important. It's public, it's popular, it's visible. But no one sees Moshe lugging Yosef's bones. It's very, very mundane. It's very even offsetting to go schlepping a coffin, according to Chazal, schlepping a coffin of bones out of the Nile. It's having an eye for responsibilities and acts that people sometimes overlook when they get involved in the more exciting, swirling moments. Let me tell you where I learned this from. I used to watch Rav Lichtenstein, Zichat Tzedek Livracha, at weddings. And at weddings, Rav Aaron did two things, and I try as best I can when I used to go to weddings to model myself off one of them, and in life to model the other one. He would dance from the opening dance till the final whistle. Sometimes you see Rosh Hashivas come, and they wait on the side, and then they bring them into the center circle. They'll do their dance, and everyone's clapping, and then they'll go home, they'll get a ride home. Rav Aaron would dance, excuse me for saying it, like a maniac. I mean, he'd be the most labedic dancer on there, jumping and I mean, no sense of, oh my goodness, I'm a Rosh Hashiva, Nish Mechubedik, is that my... That's where I learned some of my dance moves from. That in the Saturday nights in Brooklyn, you know. Got some dance moves. I'll show you Purim time if we ever get out of this lockdown. Show you the moves. But seriously, I try to dance as best I can. And when he wasn't dancing, well, what do most Rosh Hashivas do? They hobnob with people. They hang out with the... Rav Aaron would be sitting in the corner talking to the people that tend to get lost in the wedding. Who are the people that tend to get lost in the wedding? The Bubby and Zadie in the wheelchair, the Zadie on the oxygen tank, the people for whom the pace of the wedding is too frenetic and too frantic. They just sit inside and no one really pays attention to them because it's dark. And he'd be sitting and talking for hours and hours to the Bubby and the Zadie. And I try to take that lesson to heart because so many times we find ourselves swept aside by the energy in the room. Like there's a lot of energy in the room. Like on a personal level, when I speak in public. So there's sometimes hundreds of people listening to the shiur. And then after the shiur, you know, people are coming over and asking questions. I like the shiur. I didn't like the shiur. Hopefully more the former, less the latter. And then every once in a while, there are people just trying to get a word in. Say, oh, I know your mother. I know your brother. I know your cousin. I met you once. I have a question. And like sometimes it's like too many people. I try to really hone in and give each person as much attention as I can and not look through them at other people. You ever get the uncomfortable feeling that you're talking to someone in a public setting and that person really isn't talking to you? They're working the crowd while they're talking to you. They're looking through you. That's one of the worst feelings I could ever have. And I have it sometimes. People, I just don't think they're giving me their full attention. They're more interested in seeing us over there, waving, saying hello, greeting the crowds, looking, playing the crowds, as we say. And I'm just like the figure there. I'm just being used because they want to be seen talking to me, or they want to like be talking to me while they're scoping out or casing out the crowd. These are the moments in life where you tend to lose and not pay attention to neglect the quieter people, responsibilities, because you get swept up and try not to become that person. Try to always be mindful. So whatever you have in your surroundings and whatever people need you for, and give them your full attention as best you can. I remember times where, like, I spoke during between Mincha Ma'ariv and Mishnah L'Shuddos, and an older lady would come. I remember once a couple of years ago, I said like a year or two ago, came over and asked me a question. I could tell like she really wanted me to give an answer, and I had two choices. I could either give her a short, quick answer and run to Ma'ariv with everyone else. You know, Matzah Shabbos, everyone wants to make Ma'ariv early. Or I could really give her my full attention and miss Baruch Hu. It was a no-brainer for me. The Kavod HaBrios was Docha, me saying Baruch Hu. And it's because I had Rav Lichtenstein's image in my mind. And I said, I'm not going to, like, oh, everyone needs me in the room and I have to run in. They tell this interesting story about Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's a funny story, so just because I know you could use a good pick-me-up story. At a certain point, Rav Moshe Feinstein was a very, very informal person, but had so many people asking him questions, they had to control, crowd control. So they got a male secretary to be the, you know, the entree point. And you made an appointment. You came and signed in with the male secretary. They went in to speak to Rav Moshe. At one point, one day, this woman, I wouldn't say scantily clad, but not appropriately dressed to see Rav Moshe, let's put it that way, comes bursting through the doors in her high heels and says, "Where's the rabbi?" I'm like, the male secretary is getting a little like uncomfortable. Like, wait, what are you here for? I mean, you know, maybe put something else on, then come back and you have an appointment, no appointment. It's like finally this male secretary is able like to get her out the door and she's letting him have it. You know, she's mouthing off to him, "You, this, that, what are you doing? I know the rabbi." Like, and I guess it's like, you know, get out of here. Like, who are you? Finally, as the secretary is about to like give the woman the boot, Rav Moshe appears out from the door, sees who it is, and says, "Let her come, let her come, let her come." So she like starts, you know, strolling by, you know, a few choice words for the secretary. She makes her way into the inner room of Rav Moshe. And she spends like an hour and a half with Rav Moshe in the room. And this guy's like sweating bullets. What's going on? And like, what question, which shachar taz does she come up with? You know, all of a sudden to stump Rav Moshe. Comes out after an hour and a half and, you know, she like, you know, also struts her way past the secretary. "You know, I showed you, you know." And it's fine. She leaves the room and the secretary goes over to Rav Moshe and says, like, you know, she's a little bit of an oddball. Like what does she come for? So Rav Moshe says, like, what question did she stump you with? So Rav Moshe said, "Question, stump? She's my neighbor from upstairs. She has relatives in Russia that write her letters. The relatives don't speak English. She doesn't speak Russian. So I translate the letters for her and help her write a letter back to her cousins in Russia." And they're like a neighbor's. Guys, that's really, really the true mark of a gadol. I'm trying to give you lenses and spectacles to be able to. It's very easy to put on a mask and walk up on stage and give a great cheer and impress the boots off of everyone. If you really know the difference between a gadol is simple and is able to attend to simple tasks that no one's watching, not just the high and the mighty and the highfalutin and the glorified Yetzias Mitzrayim and Chamor and that's what really, really makes a gadol. And you're seeing this in Moshe Rabbeinu. He's really, really busy that day. But he's not too busy to take some bones out, to carry some bones. And that's the heroism of Moshe. And the fact that he didn't just do it begrudgingly, but it's a task, it's an honor. Fulfilling tasks in life should be an honor. I tell this to my kids all the time when they complain about taking out the garbage. It's an honor. Stop trying to run away from tasks. Be the one that fulfills. Be the bitsuist. Be the one whose life is so busy, but you just want to do more and you want to fit in more. And you'll see, you'll be so fulfilled. You put your head on the pillow at night, huh? You know what? Just what's killing me these 2 weeks, it's just I can't do things for people. I just feel like I'm in my own little shell and I'm learning my Torah, which is great. And I don't just miss you emotionally. I miss doing things for you. I miss being able to help you. I miss being able to create cheer, smile, how's it going? It's Vartarav. It's just really hard to live for yourself, to live within yourself. It's just, you don't feel good about yourself. And the more that you do, the more you feel. Sometimes boys come up, you know, I've counseled boys throughout the years. "I'm in a rut, Rabbi. Things aren't going well for me. I'm very depressed. I'm just spiritually dry." So you know what you have to do? The first thing you have to do, go find a chesed and do it as quickly as you can. You'll see, you'll feel like $1 million. Just run outside. And don't run out to the street like, you know, Archimedes and look for, you know. But just find someone you know and do a chesed, make them happy, bring a smile to the face. I promise you, you'll pull yourself out of your rut. And that's how you do things. When you do kind things for people and you fulfill tasks for them and you step out of your box, all of a sudden you feel a lot better about yourself. And that's what we see on display in Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Yirat Shamayim, because it's also the parsha about Yirat Shamayim. And let's try to define Yirat Shamayim. Yirat Shamayim sounds scary. Yirat Shamayim sounds like fear. We don't really do well with fear in our world, in part because man, modern man, feels very confident, very brave. Rav Kook talked about this, how in the modern world, and Rav Kook lived before World War II, he lived after World War I, but you can only imagine how much more resonant the statement is after World War II, that man has valiantly defended his freedom through 2 wars in the past century. Man fashions himself as brave, as confident, as courageous. All of a sudden, to build religion upon fear and fear of punishment, it shrinks your spirit, and it also is not something we like to feel. It's not something we want to feel. It's basically the entire Yiras Shamayim and Yiras HaOnesh. Yiras Shamayim, ideally, is a recognition that you can't understand Hashem. And once you recognize that, then you defer to Hashem's authority because you know he has a wisdom that's higher than yours. And the milestone moment of Yiras Shamayim for Avraham Avinu was at the Akedah, when he was tasked with fulfilling something that there's no way he could understand, nor should he understand, because it's immoral and unethical in human terms, but he was asked to sacrifice his son Yitzchak. And Hashem responded, Ata Yadati, source number 4, Ki Yirei Elokim Ata, now I know you're Yirei Shamayim. I knew that you were an Ohev Hashem before, because Avas Hashem means when you understand Hashem's will, when religion makes sense to you. How do you love Hashem? Sometimes people ask me, how do you love Hashem? Well, let me actually pull up a different source for Avas Hashem, since we're talking about Yiras Shamayim. Let's talk a little bit about Avas Hashem, and then we'll go back to Yiras Shamayim. Avas Hashem means, how do you love Hashem? One of the great challenges of religion is we've staked out the claim that Hashem is indecipherable to the human imagination. We can't understand him. We can't paint him. We can't envision him. We can't imagine him. And yet we want to try to love him. The great miracle of Jewish history, they've been able to protect the notion of an unknowable God and still create emotions and passions between ourselves and this unknowable God. It's an incredible, incredible miracle of history. So if you look at the Rambam Sichos Teshuva, I'll pull it out for you, Perek Yud, the Rambam writes as follows. Okay? Let me just make sure I can pull it up here, share. Okay. Ha'oved me'ahava, osik b'torah v'mitzvos v'holich b'nesivis ha'chochma, lovim v'nei davar ba'olam, lovim v'nei yiras harav, lovim k'dei liyash hatova. You don't follow Hashem's will because you're afraid, because you want schar. Here's the key line, a really, really important phrase in life. Ela oses ha'emes v'nei shu emes. You do what's right because it's right. Why is it avas Hashem? Well, what if Hashem came to you, I told you this earlier in the year in a dream, and said you have 24 hours off from religion. For 24 hours, it's a special COVID exemption. For 24 hours, you can do whatever you want. You could eat whatever you want. You could behave however you want. You're free. Hashem says, no schar, no onish. Would you do anything different tomorrow? If you reach religious maturity, you realize that everything Hashem asks of us is for our own benefit. And the reason I choose a religious lifestyle is not because I see it as a surrender or a suppression or suffocation of real human interests, so that I'll punch my ticket to Olam Haba, to my 72 virgins or my endless food. I realize that the type of lifestyle Hashem asks of me and expects of me is the best type of life I could lead in this world, even if there weren't Olam Haba. Why do you think the Torah never mentions Olam Haba, even once? You think something so eternal should at least be referenced once in the Torah. The answer is Hashem does not want us to see this world as a cop-out or as a suppression just to punch our ticket to the next world. Even if there wouldn't be an Olam Haba, Hashem would expect you to lead this lifestyle because it's the best way to lead your 80, 90, 100 years in this world. Even if you knew there wouldn't be Olam Haba, that'd be the best way to lead your life. Study his will, apply his morality, change the world, raise a family, speak to him, study his will, give your charity. When I realize that Hashem's will is my will, that they're synchronous, then I love him. Because I thank him for changing my life and improving my life. As you get older, guys, you'll see your love no longer applies to physical items. Right now, what do you love? You love food. You love sports and movies because it makes your heart move, your heart race. Your love, when you're young, tends to be riveted upon physical reactions. As you grow older and those physical reactions become less compelling, I loved Rev Lichtenstein. He didn't taste good, and like, you know, like I tasted good. It's not like my heart raced when I saw him. I loved him because the lifestyle he showed me changed my life, and I love him for that because he improved my life. Mirz Hashem, you'll all get married, and certainly, when you get married, physical attraction is a major, major box to check. Don't ever get married. So those boys come over, Rebbe, you have good chemistry, good chemistry. I said, you're not a test tube. Good chemistry. Unless you're madly in love, don't even start to speak to me. I said, well, how will I know if I'm madly in love? I said, first of all, if you have to ask that question, you're not in love. Second of all, don't even talk to me until you have problems with Kavan and Shmon Esrei. Until you have problems having Kavan and Shmon Esrei, you're not in love. Rebbe, I already have problems. Okay, you know the difference. You know the difference. But as you, I remember when I was your age and they would interview a 70-year-old husband and wife who were married for 70 years, whatever, 50 years. And ask the men, who's the most beautiful woman in the world? I say, my wife, Agnes. And I say, what are you? There's no way your wife, Agnes, must be. And you realize it wasn't about, he loved her not only because of how he felt physically attracted, because of their life together, everything he built together, every way she had changed his life and improved his life. So loving Hashem means, Hashem, I understand Talmud Torah, and I understand Staka, and I understand Kibbutz Avraham, and I understand Shabbos, and I'm happy because I know that my life would be a train wreck without your will. When I wanted to say goodbye to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein after my 2 years in Gush, first of all, I planned my words carefully, as we always did. I went to the mikveh 5 times, as we always did. And I said, Rebbe, you know, Chazal tell us that you have to thank your father for bringing you into this world and your Rebbe for bringing you into the next world. I want to thank you because I think you brought me into this world as well. Because until I met you, I never saw religion as the best way to lead my life. I always felt it was imposed and it suffocated me. Now that you showed me this type of lifestyle, I mean, that's what blew me away when I came to Gush. When I came to Gush, it was just, I saw such incredible people. They were smart. They were dignified. They were caring. They were people of the world. They were great fathers, great husbands, idealists. And so like, what are they smoking? In like in 70s language, like, what are these guys smoking? And I realized they're smoking Torah. Like, okay, so where can I get myself some of that stuff? It was very simple. So Avas Hashem means you realize Hashem's will is synchronous and similar and enriches and enhances your will. That's why the Rambam says Avas Hashem again. How do you love Hashem? Oh, it says MS of Neshu MS. You do what's right because it's right. It's like an anthem to live your life by. Oh, it says MS of Neshu MS. Joey, 3 words. MS Vibne MS. MS Vibne MS. 3 words. All the important truths in life can be reduced to 3 words. MS Vibne MS. But what about Yirat Shamayim? Yirat Shamayim is recognizing that you don't understand Hashem's will. And you succumb and you submit to that. And life is a combination of things you understand and things you don't understand about Hashem. And the question is, how do you accomplish Yirat Shamayim? Because that's really, really, when you have Yirat Shamayim, that makes your Yiddishkeit really robust. Because Avas Hashem flares and wanes. Sometimes you understand Hashem, sometimes you walk outside, the birds are chirping. You feel Hashem's presence, the world makes sense to you, you're happy. But that ability to synchronize your will with Hashem goes through ups and downs, as we say. But your Shemaim is like this robust, solid foundation that never changes. You always realize Hashem is beyond you. And obviously, there are stronger, more acute moments of your Shemaim, less acute moments, but it's much more stable, much more enduring, much more reliable than Avas Hashem. Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. So the answer in this week's Parsha is, but you don't need this week's Parsha, just think about your last 6 months in yeshiva. The more you try to understand Hashem, the more you realize you don't understand him. Just think about it. Are you a bigger Amharetz or a smaller Amharetz than when you first started yeshiva? You spent 6 months learning and you are bigger Amharetz because you know how little you know. Before you started yeshiva, you thought, oh my goodness, I got a 96 on my final exam on 3 blot of Kiddushin, Chav Tes, Lamed Aleph, Mitzvah Saben Alaaf. I am the Gemara champ. I'm the President Bekias champ. And then you spend 6 months trying to understand as much of Hashem's will, and you realize, my goodness, I know nothing. By definition, the biggest Talmud Chacham in the Beis Medrash is the biggest Amaretz. Difference is people who don't learn, they're Amaratzim about their Amaratzis. People who learn, you spend 6 months to become a Talmud Chacham about the fact that you're an Amaretz. You now know that you're an Amaretz. Well, it's true with everything about Hashem. The more you try to understand Hashem, the more you realize you can't understand him. Boom. That's why Kriyas Yamsuf was such a milestone marker of Yirat Shamayim, because they saw Hashem at Kriyas Yamsuf more than they ever saw him. And by seeing so much of Hashem, they realize how little of Hashem they knew. They couldn't possibly, until you try to understand Hashem, your Yirat Shamayim is going to be shallow. It's going to be hollow. It's just going to be, I'm succumbing to some higher will. The more you understand, the more you try to understand Hashem, the more you engage, the more you invest, then you realize, oh, I don't know even an inkling. It's just the tip of an iceberg. Then you're brought to Yiras Shamayim. That's why Torah is such a gateway to Yiras Shamayim, ideally, because you realize how little you know. So now look at the pasuk, and it all makes sense to you. Vayar Yisrael asa yad hagedola asher asa Hashem ben Mitzrayim. Vayiru hamas Hashem. Now that they're at the climax of their re'iyah, vayar, then they can achieve yira. You hear those two words, re'iyah and yira. They're cut from the same letters. The more you try to see, the more you realize you don't know. And the more you realize you don't know, the more Yiras Shamayim you have. If you think you're seeing Hashem, you're not seeing Hashem. If you know you can't see Hashem, then you're seeing Hashem. The clearest vision of Hashem is the vision of negative vision, of knowing that I can't see Hashem. So Re'iyah, trying to see Hashem, and you see Hashem in this case through the miracles of the Yamsif or by studying Hashem's world, trying to understand him, should lead to Yira. Vayar Yisrael Siyad HaGedola Asher Asa Hashem Mitzrayim Vayira Mas Hashem. This is exactly the recipe of David HaMelech and of the Rambam. What does David HaMelech say in Tehillim Perek Ches? A very important Perek. Ki era shamecha, maaseh etzbeosecha, yirech v'kochavim asher konanta. When I think about everything you've created, Hashem, your entire cosmos, the sweep, the enormity, the majesty, the endlessness, what's my first response? Pasuk Hey, ma'anosh ki tizkerenu, uven adam ki tifkidenu. I feel like a small little fleck of cosmic dust compared to everything you are and everything you created. And this is the recipe of the Rambam, and you saw the Atara when he talks about the interplay between Yir and Ava, source number Gimel. Hechi haderech liavaso v'yiraso. Notice he places Ava before Yira. B'shal shis bonin ha'adam b'maisa v'vruav hanifalam ha'gedolim. When you start to explore Hashem's world, v'yiramim chachmosa shein la'erech v'lokates, and you see Hashem's infinite wisdom, miyadu oyevim shabech u'mifarim yisabatav ha'gedolim, you fall in love with Hashem, you want to understand Hashem, tzama nafshi lukim l'kelchai. And here's the punchline in the Rambam. When you start to consider the enormity that you see on display, you're thrown backwards, and you're frightened. You know you're a small and significant creature, with limited inadequacy. And he quotes David, David, next pasuk, Ava leads to Yira, Re'ia leads to Yira. Vayar Yisrael Siyad Agdola. That's why this is the secret of our yeshiva, not our yeshiva. This is the secret of the type of yeshiva where Talmud Torah is meant to create Yiras Shamayim, and Yiras Shamayim is meant to be the bedrock. That's why the word Yiras Shamayim is so often used as like a substitute for how religious the person is. Like, what type of Yiras? Like, I'm asking principals now all the time. Like, okay, tell me about the boy. He's this, he's that. I just spoke to a principal. I'm not going to say which high school. But a boy, he's not sure whether his level isn't that high. So it's not a problem. So just tell me about his Yiras Shamayim. Tell me if he's a Yiras Shamayim, he'll do well. Just tell me about his Yiras Shamayim. Does he, obviously, I'm grading him on a 12th grade scale. Not every 12th grader is expected to be the Vilna Gaon Yiras Shamayim. But in terms of, you know, 12th grade term, tell me how he's doing in the Yiras Shamayim department where he is right now. That's why Avram's Akedah moment, by definition, it can only be at the end of his life. If the Akedah would have been the first moment, which we would have thought, right? Why shouldn't Avram's career be kicked off by the Akedah? A valiant display of commitment. It's going to show Hashem. That should be the kickoff of Avram's career. Super Bowl kickoff. Because this is meant to deliver the message of Yiras Shamayim. And Yiras Shamayim means you don't understand Hashem. And you can only know that you don't understand Hashem once you try to understand Hashem. So Avram has to try his entire career to understand Hashem, and he does, and that's why his entire career is an Ohev Hashem, and he's the only person in Tanakh called an Ohev Hashem. The only person is Avram, because he finally got it that Hashem wasn't angry or vengeful or grotesque or angry with humans. Avram understood that Hashem wanted life and craved life, or the Ke'am Malei Rachamim, and wanted to not just discuss Hashem that way, but be an agent of Chesed, be an agent of Rachamim. People have a hard time with Avram. Was he Socrates, or was he Mother Teresa? Was he a philosopher, or was he a do-gooder? Answer, he was both, but not because he wore two hats, because he played two positions. It was the same experience. He described a God who was kind, compassionate, and merciful, and he didn't just want to describe it, but he wanted to show people you can live that type of lifestyle. So he didn't just talk the talk, he walked the walk. And if an entire career, Hashem says, okay, now I know that you know me, but you can't, listen to this line. This is the punchline. You can't know me fully until you know that you can't know me. If you think you can know me, you don't know me. You can't know me fully with your Avas Hashem, because that premise is flawed. You can't fully know me. So your Avas Hashem, you know me, you prove me. But until you know you don't know me, you don't know me. So at the end of your life, after all your efforts to know me, now walk up the mountain and realize you can't understand my will. And when Avram passes that test, what does Hashem say? Ata yadati kirei elikim ata. Now I know. Because you saw me, Bahar Hashem Yeira'ah. Notice the conjugation or the juxtaposition of those two words. Vayar Yisrael siyad agadala vayiru. Avram goes up to Har Hashem Yeraya to see Hashem. And then when he realizes, I can't fully understand Hashem, he becomes Yerei Elohim, just like at the Yamsuf of Yari Yisrael. So this sequence between Yira Shemayim and Avas Hashem was true about Avraham. First Avah, then Yira, first an attempt to understand Hashem, then the recognition that you can't, the surrender. It was true about the Jewish people at the Yamsuf. It's how David HaMelech and the Rambam programmed the religious journey, and it came true. And with this, we'll end with a very famous Gemara in Pesachim, which now you'll understand much, much better. Shimon HaMsuni was Darish all the S'm in the Torah. Every time the Torah throws in an extra S, he had a drasha. For example, Kabed es avicha ve'esimecha, the extra word S, you also have to honor your older sibling. One of my favorite drashas in the world. Kivan shigia. Aside from the fact you have to buy food for your Rebbe, but those are my favorite drushes. Kivan shigia li'es Hashem elokecha tira. He reads the pasuk es Hashem elokecha tira. Perish. Now I know why he was perish, because by definition there's nothing you can extend Yiras Hashem to. Because Yiras Hashem means you, not that you're afraid of Hashem. If you're afraid of Hashem, I'm afraid of great white sharks. You know, afraid of Hashem for great white sharks. I'm afraid of Joey's sense of humor. I know Joey's going to put me in my place. I have a good joke. I don't know. I'm afraid. Not really. I'm afraid. Yiras Hashem doesn't mean you're afraid. Yiras Hashem means you realize you can't understand Hashem. By definition, there's nothing in the world that's like that. Everything I can understand about it, just smart enough. Enough time, enough scientists, I can understand everything. So he stopped in his tracks because there is no drasha from Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. So the Talmid said, source number 8, line 3, Rebbe, call Esem Shadarasha Mate Elem. So then you're imperfect if you can't have a perfect score. Amr Lahem Kishem Shekibalti Schara Ladrisha Kachini Mekabal Schara Laprisha. We typically, traditionally, take this to mean, well, I tried. And just like I get schar for success, I get schar for my failure because I tried, and I get the schar for a moral victory, you know, for admitting my own limitations. It's a shame. No, what Rabbi Shimon HaMsuni was saying was, you know why I'm Paresh now? Because it's Yiras Hashem. And Yiras Hashem, there is no analog. And you know how I got to understand Yiras Hashem and to be Paresh? I spent all those years being Darish. If I were to spend all those years being Darish Hashem, I wouldn't have understood Yiras Hashem and been able to be Parish. I would have said something silly, like, oh, I'm afraid of Hashem, the same way I'm afraid of a saber-toothed tiger. All those years of being Darish set me up now to understand Yiras Hashem, and this Parish is not, I throw my hands up, I can't do it. No, I'm preserving the integrity of Yiras Hashem by being Parish. This is not a Parish. It's not a, I can't come up with anything. I'll just, you know, throw in the towel and shut him down. This is the best drasha to understand Yiras Hashem is to say nothing. Because if I say something, then I'm going to start to diminish the potency of Yiras Hashem. And what helped me understand all this? My attempts throughout the years to understand Hashem. So she came, Kishem, Shekibalti, Schar, Ladrisha, the Drisha, enabled me to understand Yiras Hashem, I mean, be parish. So it's all one process of Drisha and Prisha. Say differently, but this will end. Avas Hashem reminds you can't understand Hashem. Understanding you can't understand Hashem, Yiras Hashem protects the transcendence of Hashem so that you can be loving a real Hashem, not a fake idol. Without Ava, you couldn't have Yira, just be fright and fear. Without Yira, your Ava would disintegrate into intimacy with the idol because you humanize Hashem. So Avas Hashem protects, yields to Yira, and Yira protects the integrity of Ava. Or in the terminology of Parshas B'Shalach, Re'ia yields Yira, and Yira preserves the integrity of Re'ia. So now you're not looking at your kid brother or at some god that you can understand. You're seeing the Yad Hashem, which you can't understand. So it's a good parasha to think a little bit about Yira Shemayim. Okay. So we miss you all. It's really cold here in the Base Meadows, so really cold and dark and quiet. But hopefully we'll all be together really, really soon. And to all the COVID-19 sufferers, have an easy, easy time. Jeremy, you're still clean, right?
Baruch Hashem.
You're like Mighty Mouse over there. Okay, Mark, you're also clean. Jason's clean. Joey, how you feeling?
Much better than the weekend, Baruch Hashem.
Okay, great, great. Okay, we'll be together one day, very soon, for Shabbos, I guess.
Thank you, Rav.
Bezrat Hashem. Thank you, Rav.
Okay, I'll see you. I'm not going to be able to come tomorrow. I have to give a presentation in Chicago. So. During Maariv. Laila Tov, everyone.